Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. There's a presidential election coming up. Are you enthusiastic? Excited by the choice? And determined to do your best to help the best man win? Well, we're not either. Turns out W.E.B. Du Bois and Chris Hedges have felt this way too. So if misery loves company, I hope you'll stay tuned. Is it just me, or is the election of 2012 a bummer, as we aging hippies used to say back in the day? A much bigger bummer than the election of 2008, which was bummer enough for me. 2008 seemed to be the race between an aging warmonger and a fresh, principled, idealistic young man who wanted to rein in the corporations and the military, who wanted to restore compassion and decency and democracy to America. This was a snow job, but lots of people bought it. For lots of Americans, 2008 was the first election in decades where they did not feel that they were holding their nose and voting for the lesser of two evils. And lo and behold, the knight on the white horse won the election. And as Bruce Gagnon so aptly put it, as soon as the election was over, the knight led his white horse into the barn, closed the barn door, put a big padlock on the door, and that was that, and got on with business as usual. I did not vote for Obama, or McCain either. I voted for a third-party candidate. But I'm not gloating. I truly expected Obama's policies to be somewhat better than those of Bush and McCain. I was wrong. It took about 3 years, but finally liberals have begun to criticize Obama's militarism, his assaults on civil liberties, his kowtowing to Wall Street and the rest of the Fortune 500, his ignoring the increasing economic distress of us average Americans. In January 2009, Obama was president, elected with a large popular mandate. Democrats held substantial majorities in both houses of Congress. Time for some of that change we can believe in, right? Wrong again. Obama built his foreign policy team out of old-time war hawks, Iraq war supporters to a man and woman. He built his economics team out of former Goldman Sachs top executives. He focused the first half of his term on giving trillions of dollars of public money to the very Wall Street crooks who had just brought down the world economy through fraud and wild speculation. It wasn't that Obama tried and failed to make liberal reforms. Rather, he tried hard and succeeded in further enriching Wall Street and Big Pharma, and further enriching the military-industrial complex, at the expense of the increasingly poor rest of us. Meanwhile, as Obama was behaving like a right-wing Republican, the real right-wing Republicans were denouncing him as a dangerous, radical socialist. The mind boggles. Here's a nice satiric clip on the very theme. It's from a comedy group called The Final Edition.
A new thriller from the producers of the science fiction classic film, The Bush Tax Cuts Will Create Jobs, and its sequel, The War in Iraq, will last 3 months. In a world where people stopped believing that Barack Obama is a gay, atheistic Muslim socialist, only one man knows the truth.
Welcome back to Fox and Friends. Look, this president has been playing it cool to get a second term, but once he doesn't have to worry about re-election, he will raise taxes on firemen.
But he never even hinted he'd do a thing like that.
And mark my words, he will make little blind boys get married to other little blind boys.
It's only after the votes were counted that people finally believe the truth.
The president has won an historic second term and has issued an executive order to round up the little blind boys for the mass wedding.
How could we liberals have been so wrong?
The Republican Rumor Machine presents Obama's Second Term, O2H.
And millions weep today as conservatives are arrested. Interest rates go up 1,000,000%, and the president arrives at his second inauguration, driving a Prius hybrid made of Osama bin Laden's stem cells.
No institution was safe. No conspiracy theory was too petty or childish to be real.
All right, Dallas Cowboys. The president says the entire game of football has been canceled.
Oh, no! No way, man!
But, Coach, the stadium is full of fans! They came here to see something!
I know. Gentlemen, bring out the yoga mats.
Oh, Coach.
O for Obama. 2 for his second term. H because it's a better joke. If it has an H.
The U.S. Supreme Death Panel will come to order. We resume the trial of Ted Nugent on the charge of being Ted Nugent.
But I'm not Ted Nugent.
Quiet until you're sworn in.
Place your hand on this Koran. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, insofar as truth can be understood in a relativistic, amoral paradigm?
Huh?
I've heard enough. The Supreme Death Panel sentences you to death.
The Death Panel always sentences death.
Being white and heterosexual will become even harder than it is already. And Franklin Roosevelt will be replaced on the dime by Jimmy Carter, a Democrat.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has won the war against religion.
We swear to God, it's going to happen in O2H when Barack Obama gets reelected.
A fun piece from the final edition, but dig the implicit meaning underneath the satire. It's very familiar and very much the line of the Democratic Party leadership. The implicit argument goes like this. The right-wing crazies are broadcasting all manner of preposterous charges against Barack Obama, reviling him and saying all manner of evil against him falsely. Therefore, we sane, sensible people should vote for Obama. This logic makes perfect sense until we get to the therefore, right? Just because Rush Limbaugh hates Obama, or pretends to, that doesn't mean that we should vote for Obama. The enemy of my enemy is not necessarily my friend, right? If you're a person of any principles on either the left or the right, you've got a decision to make. Do you hold your nose and vote yet again for the lesser of two evils? Do you vote for a third candidate who, in our corrupt system, has no chance of winning? Or do you call the whole election a sick charade and refuse to dignify it by voting? I just found an amazing old essay from the left side of the political spectrum. It's by one of the great figures of black liberation in America, W.E.B. Du Bois. Surprisingly, this noted civil rights leader is encouraging Americans, even black people, not to vote. I've condensed it for radio. Okay, a little background. The year is 1956, the year of the landmark Brown versus Board of Education. The Republican president, Dwight Eisenhower, is running for re-election. His Democratic challenger is Adlai Stevenson. The essay is titled, Why I Won't Vote, by W.E.B. Du Bois. In 1956, I shall not go to the polls. I believe that democracy has so far disappeared in the United States that no two evils exist. There is but one evil party with two names, and it will be elected despite all I can do or say. There is no third party. On the presidential ballot, in a few states, a socialist party will appear. Few will hear its appeal because it will have almost no opportunity to take part in the campaign and explain its platform. If a voter organizes or advocates a real third-party movement, he may be accused of seeking to overthrow this government by force and violence. Anything he advocates by way of significant reform will be called communist. The Eisenhower administration is carrying on the greatest preparation for war in the history of mankind. Stevenson promises to maintain or increase this military buildup. The weight of our taxation is unbearable and rests mainly and deliberately on the poor. This administration is dominated and directed by wealth and for the accumulation of wealth. It runs smoothly, like a well-organized industry, and should do so because industry runs the government for its own benefit. Corporate wealth profits as never before in history. We turn over the national resources to private profit and have few funds left for education, health, or housing. It costs 3 times his salary to elect a senator and many millions to elect a president. This money comes from the very corporations which today are the government. In a real democracy, this would be enough to turn the party responsible out of power. Yet this we cannot do. In foreign affairs, the Democrats have surrendered all differences from the Republicans. Even in domestic affairs, how does Stevenson differ from Eisenhower? He has no clear policy on war or preparation for war, on water and flood control, on reduction of taxation, on the welfare state. He wavers on civil rights, and his party blocked civil rights in the Senate. Negroes hope to muster 400,000 votes in 1956. Where will they cast them? What have the Republicans done to enforce the education decision of the Supreme Court? What has the administration done to rescue Negro workers, the most impoverished group in the nation, while the nation sends billions abroad to protect oil investments and help employ slave labor in the Union of South Africa and the Rhodesias? Will the Democratic Party of segregationists Talmadge, Eastland, and Ellender do better than the Republicans if the Negroes return the Democrats to office? I have no advice for others in this election. Are you voting Democratic? Are you voting for Eisenhower? Will your helpless vote either way support or restore democracy to America? Is the refusal to vote in this phony election a council of despair? No, it is dogged hope. It is hope that, if 25 million voters refrain from voting in 1956 on their own accord, this might make the American people ask how much longer this dumb farce can proceed without even a whimper of protest. Can we not see that American culture is rotting away? Our honesty, our human sympathy, even our literature. The one thing we want is to be rich. Success is measured by income. We are not training poets or musicians, but atomic engineers. Business is built on successful lying called advertising. We want money in vast amount, no matter how we get it. So we have it, and what then? Is the answer the election of 1956? With Stevenson and Nixon, with Eisenhower and Eastland, we remain in the same mess. I will be no party to it, and that will make little difference. You will bravely march to the polls, and that also will make no difference. Stop trying to run Russia. Stop giving the Chinese advice when we cannot rule ourselves decently. Stop yelling about a democracy we do not have. Democracy is dead in the United States. Yet there is still nothing to replace real democracy. Drop the chains, then, that bind our brains. Drive the money changers from the seats of the cabinet and the halls of Congress. Call back some faint spirit of Jefferson and Lincoln, and when again we can hold a fair election on real issues, let's vote. And not till then. Is this impossible? Then democracy in America is impossible. That was W.E.B. Du Bois' essay, Why I Won't Vote, written and published back in 1956. And the fact that things are much, much worse today does not mean that Du Bois was wrong back 56 years ago. There's so many great phrases in this piece that ring so true today, like, the weight of our taxation is unbearable and rests mainly and deliberately on the poor. And the money to fund campaigns comes from the very corporations which today are the government. This one really struck me. Du Bois wrote, "We are not training poets or musicians, but atomic engineers." Today, of course, we are not even training atomic engineers, but rather bond traders and hedge fund managers and tax lawyers.
North, south, east, west, kill the best and buy the rest. It's just spend a buck to make a buck. You don't really give a flying about the people in misery. Takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with these affordable debts. They seem to pay off local bottom feeders, passing themselves off as leaders. Kiss the ladies, shake hands with the fellows, and it's open for business like a cheap bordello, and they call it democracy, and they call it democracy, and they call it democracy, and they call it democracy. You see the loaded eyes of the children too, trying to make the best of it the way kids do. One day you're gonna rise from your habitual feast and find yourself staring down the throat of a beast they call a revolution. IMF, dirty IMF, takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. They call it democracy. And they call it democracy.
A little Bruce Cockburn there, one of the two fine songs I know about democracy. The other is Leonard Cohen's Democracy is Coming to the USA. Both democracy songs were written by Canadians, interestingly enough. These days I'm feeling that Cohen is too optimistic. Some form of government is coming to the USA, but the name of it is not democracy. Anyway, Bruce Cockburn's They Call It Democracy seemed a nice compliment to W.E.B. Du Bois's stunning essay. Before we move on to Chris Hedges, here's a nice rant I just came across. As you know, I'm a fan of the rant as an art form. It's about the election and the same lack of choice that Du Bois lamented. It's by a comedian named Lee Camp. It's not at all funny. It's too true to be funny. But let's have a listen anyway.
I know who's going to win the presidency in November. I do. I already know. And better yet, I'm willing to tell you. It's going to be the guy who seems to support endless war, countless drone attacks, and would sooner sit down to watch every Pauly Shore movie back to back than consider decreasing our 900 military bases around the world by a single one. It's the guy who essentially never mentions climate change, but if he does, still doesn't actually lead the charge to changing the unsustainable way in which we live. You can buy 10 t-shirts for $10 at Walmart, and then rather than washing them, just throw them out when they're dirty. It's good for the economy. It's the guy who will decrease funding to NASA while increasing funding to Homeland Security and drone surveillance of our own people. He doesn't want to find out what's going on in other worlds and other galaxies. Who gives a shit? But he sure as hell wants to know what's happening in your living room. Although the next step might be to actually send Mars rovers into our bedrooms, and I think that'll be pretty cool. Who will win the presidency? I bet it'll be the guy who couldn't care less about the struggling people of Palestine or the sweatshop laborers who make the products we buy. The guy who would bust up any UN treaty that might limit our bustling billions of dollars of arms sales to other countries. The guy who's never seen a semi-automatic rifle he doesn't want out on the streets, but will allow the arrest of anyone holding a bullhorn without a permit to protest. The guy who will demand the severe punishment of anyone who reveals wrongdoing by the government, the military, the big banks, or even the guy who sells hot dogs to tourists outside the White House. He overcharges for those hot dogs, but the whistleblower who revealed it is now vacationing in Guantanamo. It will be the guy who deports immigrants hand over fist and would sooner adopt Honey Boo Boo than stand up for unions over the corporatists. Who will win the presidency? It'll be the guy who surrounds himself with advisors from Goldman Sachs, GE, and Monsanto. He will be the next president of the United States. Not only will he win the election, but I bet you he'll get every single electoral vote. So I suggest you get to Vegas and bet on that guy. It's a lock.
That was Lee Camp. While Du Bois advocated not voting, Chris Hedges advocates voting for a third-party candidate, and then taking to the streets in nonviolent civil disobedience. Here's his article from late September, which I have condensed. It's called, How Do You Take Your Poison? We will all swallow our cup of corporate poison. Whether we take it from Nurse Romney or Nurse Obama, the corporate hemlock will be shoved down our throats. Corporate power is poised to carry out U.S. history's most savage assault against the poor and the working class, not to mention the Earth's ecosystem. And no one in power has any intention or ability to stop it. If you insist on participating in the charade of a two-party Democratic election, at least be clear about what you are doing. By voting Democratic or Republican, you are giving legitimacy to a corporate agenda that means your own impoverishment and disempowerment. All the things that stand between us and utter destitution, Medicaid, food stamps, Pell Grants, Head Start, Social Security, public education, federal grants and aid to America's states and cities, and others, are about to be shredded by the corporate state. Our corporate oligarchs are harvesting the nation, grabbing as much as they can, as fast as they can, in the inevitable descent. This January, we will be assaulted by automatic spending reductions. They will begin to dismantle and defund some of our most important government programs. Mitt Romney will not stop it. Barack Obama will not stop it. And while Romney has been exposed as a shallow hypocrite, Obama is in a class by himself. There is hardly a campaign promise from 2008 that Obama has not broken. He promised to support the public option in health care, close Guantanamo, raise the minimum wage, regulate Wall Street, support labor unions in their struggles with employers, reform the Patriot Act, negotiate a just peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, curb our imperial expansion in the Middle East, stop torture, protect reproductive rights, carry out a comprehensive immigration reform, cut the deficit by half, create 5 million new energy jobs, and halt home foreclosures. Obama, while promising to defend Social Security, also says he stands behind the planned cuts and benefits planned by his deficit commission. At the same time, Obama's payroll tax cuts have undermined the solvency of Social Security, making it an easier target for privatization. But that is just the start. Cities and states are borrowing at higher and higher interest rates to keep themselves afloat. In the past year alone, local governments cut 66,000 jobs, mostly those of teachers and other school employees. The costs of our most basic needs, from food to education to health care, are being pushed upward with no control or regulation. Tuition and fees at four-year colleges climbed 300% between 1990 and 2011, fueling the college loan crisis that has left graduates unemployed and with $1 trillion in debt. Healthcare costs rose 150% in the same period. 47 million American citizens and one out of every three children depend on food stamps. Meanwhile, since 2008, the Treasury Department and Federal Reserve Bank have doled out $16 trillion to financial institutions and corporations worldwide. Fiscal implosion is only a matter of time, and the corporate state is preparing. Obama's assault on civil liberties has outpaced that of George W. Bush. Obama has refused to restore habeas corpus, used the Authorization to Use Military Force Act to justify assassinating U.S. citizens, eavesdropped on tens of thousands of citizens without a warrant, employed the Espionage Act six times to threaten whistleblowers with prison, and supported military detention without trial of Americans. All this gives you a hint of the shackles the Democrats, as well as the Republicans, intend to place on those who contemplate dissent. But perhaps the most egregious assault will be carried out by the fossil fuel industry. Obama has repudiated the Kyoto Accords and has done nothing to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. He reversed 20 years of federal policy by expanding fracking and offshore drilling. He has authorized drilling in federally protected lands along the East Coast, Alaska, and 4 miles off Florida's Atlantic beaches. All this spells disaster for the planet. You get the point. Obama is not in charge. Romney would not be in charge. Politicians are the public face of corporate power. They are corporate employees. Their personal narratives, their promises, their rhetoric, and their idiosyncrasies are meaningless. And that is why the cost of the two presidential campaigns is estimated to reach an obscene $2.5 billion. The corporate state does not produce a product that is different. It produces just different brands. And brands cost a lot of money to sell. You can dismiss those of us who in protest will vote for a third-party candidate and invest our time and energy in acts of civil disobedience. You can pride yourself on being practical. You can swallow the false argument of the lesser of two evils. But ask yourself, once this nightmare starts kicking in, who the real sucker is. And on that harsh note from Chris Hedges, we'll end our show on a bummer of an election. Tune in 4 years from now for another, If the World is Still Standing. You'll find links to the uncut versions of everything on our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. And thank you for listening to New World Notes. Illegitimi non carborundum, and ciao.